This program is brought to you by Emory University.
This book report is brought to you by Emory Report.
My name is Jean Bianchi. I'm a professor emeritus of religion at Emory University, and the title of my memoir is Taking a Long Road Home. Dressed in my salt and pepper uniform corduroy pants, I came home from third grade at Sacred Heart School in Oakland to witness the interfamily winemaking event. A block away, I could see the stained wooden grape boxes from my cousin's place in the country piled empty along the sidewalk. My heart leapt at the sight. I ran with my book bag swung over my navy cardigan sweater. Sister Claudine would not have approved my hanging around with Italian immigrant forebears, sipping last year's Dago Red from stubby chiseled glasses in the dirt floor basement of my grandfather's house. But I was now beyond the border of rules. The old men were bragging about last year's vintage as their rubber boots stomped the fresh grapes in large wood tubs. Then they poured the dark brew into a manually operated crusher. The pungent smell is still vivid. The old guys outdid each other with stories in Genovese dialect, some from the old country, others from their experiences in America. The place reeked of crushed grapes, the latter used by a few brave souls to produce grappa, a distilled liquor made from the remains of the wine press. My Uncle John's amateur radio system, strung with thrown-away speakers, crisscrossed the basement. But the music was poor competition for the voices urging on the two men who turned the screw of the crusher round and round like figures from a Bruegel painting of harvest time. No one begins life with a clean slate, a tabula rasa. Only later, of course, did I realize how immersed I was in an ethnic Italian-American culture. Even they were not generic Italians, but paisani, neighbors from the countryside in Liguria and Tuscany with their specific habits. On that winemaking day, I would never have thought that someday I would come back to this basement to find clues for authentic living. As an 8-year-old altar boy, I assigned religion and God to the Holy Name nuns who taught me. They were mostly Irish women who bespoke discipline in their long black robes and starched white coifs that hid their hair and forehead. I took it for granted that someone so specially attired was also special to God. For me, the spiritual realm was connected with convent corridors that I waxed and the dark, high wainscoting topped by somber portraits of Mother Superior long gone. Religion had to do with the priest house and serving mass in black cassock and white surplice, carrying water and wine for the great ritual, ringing the little bell for the sanctus and the consecration of the host, as well as the Latin prayers, Introibo ad altare Dei, I will go into the altar of God. It had to do with the sacristy where priests put on liturgical garments. It had to do especially with the confessional, with its heavy drapery and sliding door and recitation of sins, and dark pews on Saturday afternoon where we said our three Our Fathers and three Hail Marys in reparation for the week's sins. Such formal confession was a prerequisite for receiving communion on Sunday. These aspects of a Catholic childhood enfolded the context of my early life, but they were not its deepest roots. That dirt basement and the key players around it on 42nd Street in Oakland, California, really formed me. Gertrude Stein spoke of Oakland as a place with no there there, but for me it had great on-the-ground salience or theirness. My maternal grandparents lived right across the street from us. Luigia Mangini, my nonna, an intellectual of sorts, stretched her limited formal education to read the Italian newspaper every day with her Woolworth reading glasses. In her big wedding picture, she was strong and quite good-looking, wearing a wool sepia dress, sitting next to nonno, my grandfather, in dark serge with a heavy mustache. Of course, that's a later judgment of her looks. In childhood, I was more interested in her cooking and banter as she held forth on everything. I provided an audience for her. Nonna was opinionated. She hated Roosevelt for opposing Mussolini and getting us into World War II, but she gradually developed more tolerance toward Eisenhower, whose name she pronounced Usenawa, At her heavy wooden kitchen table, where family life took place near a wood-burning stove, I learned by a kind of osmosis that reading was important. Of course, she never lectured on the value of reading. That came indirectly through the feel and smell of pasta dough that she would powder and roll and toss and roll again. That table was important because there I watched her make from scratch the world's best ravioli, which I look forward to eating with the abandon of youth. The smell of her mushroom sauce simmering in that small kitchen is still with me. Nonna's house was also a main comfort zone when the Sturm und Drang of my home across the street became overwhelming. Nonna went to church but expressed independent judgment about clerical foibles. She voiced a more benign judgment, for example, of my second grade teacher, Sister Anne Marie, who ran off with a mechanic. That was a scandal of cosmic proportions in 1938. The poor thing was unhappy, she said, in that dark building. I remember holding my grandmother's hand on the way to semi-annual Italian missions, intense preaching events with loud off-key congregational singing of Noi Vogliam Dio, Che Nostro Padre, We Want God Who Is Our Father, at nearby churches. On the way home, we would collect mushrooms in empty lots and gather eucalyptus pods, whose scent was thought to ward off bedroom varmints. I remember her pitchfork in hand, turning the soil to plant vegetables. And I see her in a long brown overcoat with fur collar, holding a large purse with both hands in front of her. As an altar boy, I saw this classic country immigrant stance replicated many times.
The preceding program is copyrighted by Emory University. Please visit us at emory.edu.